Lachim Aleph, Perkut Ches, Pasuk Chafei. Ve'emer Eliyahu Nevi'a Baal, Bachor Lechem Aparo Echad, Ve'osu Rishoyna Ki Atam Harabim. Bikiru B'Shem Elikeichem, Elihechem, Ve'eish Leitosimu. So Eliyahu was telling the Nevi'a Baal, you guys go first, Ki Atam Harabim. Right? Meaning you, again, we mentioned last time that Eliyahu was giving them every single advantage in the book. You get the better power, right? Again, there were two parim, and they were not equal. One of them was better. They got the better par. They go first. And also, they're the majority. They're the rabim. Yeah. Now, in the end of the pasuk, it mentions, ve'esh lo itasimu. They should not put any fire. Meaning, their God, so to speak, is supposed to bring down fire from Shamayim. Now, there's a very interesting chazal that says that what they actually tried to do, the Nevi'a Baal, is they had someone hiding underneath the Mizbeach. They had some kind of hollow part underneath
the
Mizbeach.
And he started the fire.
And he was supposed to start the fire. Right? That was their plan, at least. But what happened was, a snake came
and took care of him.
And yeah, and bit him and killed him. So this person that was supposed to save the day for the Nevi'a Baal was killed. So their plan did not exactly work. So they take the par that was given to them. Right? They're davening to their Baal, to their God. Right? And no one's answering them. Now, the end of the pasuk is referring to the Mizbeach of Eliyahu. See, they thought that the reason they're not being answered is because there's another Mizbeach right next to theirs, the one of Eliyahu, right? And they figured that because there's another Mizbeach there, that's, so to speak, ruining the spirit, whatever it is, it's ruining it for them. Therefore, they went in and they destroyed the Mizbeach of Eliyahu, hoping that's going to give them, that they're going to be able to find favor. That's going to help them find favor in the eyes of their God, and then he's going to finally answer them. Yeah. So now it says that they called me a boiker of Adat Sarayim. They're calling out to the Baal from the morning until the afternoon. Why specifically does the pasuk refer to that time? Because again, we mentioned last time that the Baal, his power is during the time when the sun is out. When the sun is out, when it's hot, that's when the Baal is powerful, and so that's why they needed specifically to have the ceremony during the morning hours and the afternoon hours when the sun is most powerful.
But interesting, before this experiment, they did something the same to ask his God to take animals or.
Did they ever have
Did you do it with this before?
No, doesn't seem like that.
It's kind of first time.
Yeah, it was the first time. I think it was clear that they didn't want this kind of competition, whatever you want to call it. They didn't want it. But Achav forced them to do it. Achav didn't really leave them any choice. The Nevi'a Sheira, the other Nevi'im that were working for the other Avodah Zarah called the Sheira, they were shielded by Izebel, the queen. Right, she shielded them because she knew that they don't stand the chance. So she didn't make them go. She didn't make them go. But Achav did make the Nevi'a Baal go. But they're doing this against their will. They didn't actually want this. So it wasn't like, you know, it was a common practice, like, oh, you know, bringing down fire from the heavens. It never actually worked for them.
It says overhanded, but that the behemoth, whatever they were going to sacrifice, ran away from them. He didn't want to be sacrificed.
Right, yeah. Esther, it says that the Radak brings down a very interesting parash. He says that when they chose their par and they wanted to bring him, they couldn't move him. And he stuck his claws, I don't know, some, I guess they have some kind of claws that they can stick into the ground, right? Their fingernails, whatever it was, the par stuck his fingernails into the ground, and he didn't want to move. Because apparently he knew somehow that he's being chosen to Nevi'ei HaBaal. Until Eliyahu came over to him and he said,
go.
Right, so first this par turns to Eliyahu. This is very interesting. I think this is the only other place in Tanakh where you find an animal talking. The other place is when the atoyin of Bil, the donkey of Bilam, is talking to him, right? Ve'ivtach Hashem es pi ha'asayin, and this is another time where we find a conversation, so to speak, between this par and Eliyahu Anavi. This par is saying, he tells Eliyahu, me and my brother, they were twins apparently. We came out of one stomach, right? Our mother gave birth to both of us. We grew up together. Right, and we were friends. Now, and now he's going to be Mekadesh Shem Shamayim. Right, he's going to you, to Eliyahu, and me. You know what's going to be with me? I'm going to the Baal. Yeah, so it's not fair. So I'm going to, so to speak, I'm going to be machis. I'm going to anger HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Eliyahu says, you don't have to worry about it. Just like the Shem Shemaim will be miskadesh, will be sanctified by the par that I'm taking, Eliyahu is taking, so too Shem Shemaim will be sanctified by you as well. And just like the my par is going to be burnt, so too the fact that you are not going to be burnt, and there is no fire going to come from Shemaim to burn you, that's going to be just the same Kiddush Hashem. So you have nothing to worry about.
Where do we see that?
Sorry?
Where do we see that? What you?
It's brought down in the Radak. The Radak brings it down. Right. So the par says, "Okay, I'm still not going to move until you actually give me over to them." So Eliyahu went in and he gave them over the par, and that's when he agreed to go forward. he brings it down from Divrei Agada. Yeah, Divrei Agada. He's not so happy with his pshat. He says it's very merchoiking min haseichel. He says it's a bit far-fetched, but that's what he brings down. That's what he brings down from the Agada. Now it says. It says that we have ve'ein kol ve'ein oine, that when Nevi'ei HaBaal daven, there was no kol, there was no sound, and there was no answer either. Meaning, they were not davening necessarily for fire that will come down from Shemaim and burn their par. There was an alternative. They could have, they would have been happy with a kol of nevuah, some kind of baskol, some kind of heavenly voice that would come down and answer them, so to speak. Right, but that didn't happen. Not obviously that didn't happen, and also the ish, the fire, obviously didn't happen. So that's why it says vein kol. There was no kol of nevuah, vein oine. There was no answer for what they were asking for, which was fire. Okay, let's continue. Pasuk Chaf Zayin, ve'yivatzaraim ve'yhatal be'emel yol leimor kiru v'kol gadol hilukimu. So when it started, getting late, it's late afternoon, Eliel starts making fun of them. He's like, maybe he's asleep. Maybe if you cry a little louder, maybe he's going to wake up, right? And then he's going to answer you. Then he's going to bring down this fire. Why do you wait so long? Why don't you make fun of them in the morning? Because at the afternoon is when the sun is most powerful. The sun is more powerful in the afternoon, and that was the time they were truly hoping. Okay, now he's going to really answer us because now the sun is really powerful. So the Malbim of Eir goes through what he calls the Tnoi HaElikus. the conditions of a true God, meaning the marking points of a true God. A true God is someone that he's not gonna, that you don't need to call loudly towards him, right? Because first of all, he's not far away; he's everywhere, and also because there is no defect like being tired or unknowing in some way, right? There is no such thing in a true God. There is no such defect of, oh, he's too tired or he doesn't know. Yeah, so he's telling them, basically he's pointing out that their God is not a real God. It's not a true God, because if it was a true God, then he wouldn't have any kind of defect of some sort. He wouldn't have anything that would holding him back, that would be holding him back from answering them. So that's everything that he's pointing out in this pasuk. V'chisiach v'chisigloi v'chiderachloi. Chisiachloi means that maybe he's thinking, he's distracted, he's thinking about something else. Chisigloi means that lasig means to catch up, meaning he's moving from place to place. Maybe he's not here, maybe he's in a different place right now, he's in a different location, he doesn't know where you are, he's looking for you, he can't find you. Maybe you should share your location and GPS.
He says, maybe he's talking, or he's pursuing enemies, or he is on a journey. Perhaps he is sleeping and will awaken.
He was watching television and didn't want to be disturbed.
That's right.
Give him all these. Where is he? Well, he's busy.
No, but this. But why you believe, if this even it's a real God, why should do everything he, somebody ask him? Even our God is not one to, if we ask him to make fire, why should do it? It's his business, not our business.
What do you mean it's his business?
No, but they expect real gods should make fire. Why? If I ask Hashem to make fire, he does it?
Well, you maybe not, but it's actually interesting. It's a machlekes in the mafarshim, in the commentators, if Eliyahu himself, right, if he was promised by Hashem that he's going to bring down fire, or really, there was no promise. Eliyahu had no idea. You didn't get any promise that Hashem will bring down fire. But he actually davened to Hashem. We're going to see later on. When he davened to Hashem, why did he daven to Hashem? If Hashem promised him that he would bring down fire, why do you have to daven? Right? Just say, okay, Hashem, like, all right, now it's good. No, just, you know.
Give him the signal.
Give him the signal, and then, you know, then he's going to bring the fire. Why did he have to daven? Obviously, Hashem didn't promise him anything. So, but he davened in order for there to be a Kiddush Hashem. He davened, please Hashem, make a Kiddush Hashem and bring down fire.
But it means there is people who ask kind of special people. Navi.
Yeah, Navim, right. Obviously, if me and you would ask for fire, I don't think Hashem would bring down fire, right?
You got rain, that's all.
Yeah. Gotta be someone special like Eliyahu HaNavi. Okay. Yeah. And then what the Malbim explains that when it says v'chiderachloi, that's referring to the defects of a human being, which is what we call a nefesh hatzemachas. The growing spirit, anyone who has a growing spirit, part of growing is sleeping as well. Because the the sleep comes from the plants, he explains. And the human being is composed from all the different abilities and forces and strengths and weaknesses from the animals and from the plant and tree kingdom, right? They're all put in the human being. That's why it says, right, we spoke about this I think previously, that it says lechem al anamala otzel. Go if you're lazy, go look at the ant. Why go look at the ant? I'm not an ant. I'm a human being, right? But we're part of our soul, part of our spirit, is composed from the same abilities that the ant has. So the ant is obviously very, very is working its whole life pretty much. Right? It's very busy. It doesn't never rests. So too, we should tap into that ability that we have inside of us. So he explains over here that the need to sleep comes from a nefesh atzimachas, the growing spirit, which is like from plants and trees. They apparently they need to sleep, and that was put in a human being as well. And obviously, that does not, you know, God obviously doesn't have that. God doesn't need sleep. But in any case, that's what Eliyahu was referring to over here when he says, maybe your God is, you know, like a growing spirit, and therefore he needs to sleep, right?
The article translates that sentence in a different way. Maybe he's relieving himself.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's actually funny.
Right. Okay, I haven't seen that.
Well, see, down here he says that they, with their religion, they think that their Baal is like a human being. He has to go to the bathroom. He has to do this. He has life like a human. So this Elio said, well, maybe he's busy doing all these things. That's why he isn't answering you.
Right, right.
He's giving him the...
Right. He's making fun of them. Yeah, that's what he's doing. Okay, so let's continue. Pasuk Chaf Tes. Ve'ikavar tzaraim, ve'isnabu adla alayis ha'mincha. Right, and when the afternoon passed as well... And then it's basically time, meaning time for mincha. It's the late afternoon. It's almost the sun is going down. Vein kol, vein oine, vein koshev. Right? There's no answer and no one listening, so to speak. I'm sorry. I skipped the pasuk. I skipped pasuk chofres. Sorry, pasuk chofres. Veikru b'kol gadol. So they cry. They're crying out, you know, as loud as they can. Right, and they're starting to cut themselves, literally, to cut themselves. The Malmir points out over here that the reason they're cutting themselves is because they're hoping maybe their God is going to realize the pain that they're going through. And that will awake him, maybe. You know, maybe that will awake him, and he's gonna, be able to wake up. Pasuk Chaf Tes. We mentioned before also that the reason why they needed to cut themselves was because their God is connected to Ma'adim. Which is Jupiter, right? The red planet?
No, Mars.
Mars. Right. Mars, which is the red planet. And spiritually, their God is connected to Mars. And they're cutting themselves because the blood, so to speak, is going to connect them to their God. That's why they needed to cut themselves to bring the blood. Pasuk Chaf Tes, we saw this, but we'll see it again. Right? And they're...
Nothing's happening.
Right, nothing's happening. It's already late afternoon. And now they know that there's really, like, there's no chance. The sun is already going down, right? Their hope was that the sun, when the sun is out and it's strong, you know, that's at least going to be the time when they'll be answered. But no, it's not happening. And when it says vein koshev, it's actually referring to the people. The people are not even listening to them anymore. The people are starting to like disbelieve in the Baal, because they see, oh look, you know, it's not happening clearly, right? Nothing's going on, so they're starting to lose the people. And now things are getting really, really dangerous for them. V'hemer Elio, now Elio steps in. And he says, V'hemer Elio l'cholom, k'shu elai. V'yigosh k'olom elav. So he calls out to the people. He says, okay, guys.
Step up.
Now it's my turn. Let's see what I can do.
That's right. Sorry? He had his turn.
Exactly. You listen, you had all day, guys.
It's only fair.
You had all day. Nothing happens. Now give me a chance. V'yirapes mizbeach Hashem ha'horus. And now, as we mentioned before, they, the Nevi Baal, they destroyed the Mizbeach of Elio.
And now he fixed it.
Yeah, now he fixed it. And now he fixed it because it was broken. Now, the Radakir brings down in Medrash that this is actually the same Mizbeach that Shaul built. Shaul, there was a time where the Balmites were allowed. And during that time, excuse me,
you could bring a korban.
Right. During that time, you could bring a korban also on a bama. Right. Typically, when the mizbeach when the Beis Hamikdash is around, you're only allowed to bring a korban in the Beis Hamikdash. But before the Beis Hamikdash was around, it's called Bishas Heter Balmos, during the time where the Balmos, these random Mizbechos, were around. And during that time, you're allowed to bring carbon on that kind of Mizbech.
What about the Oyel Moed? Was destroyed already?
Yeah, that was long gone. But there was Bishas Heter Balmos during the time when Shaul was king. They would bring a carbon on any Mizbech anywhere.
All right. When the oil moyed was standing, they brought the carbonos to the oil moyed, or they could still have.
When oil moyed was standing, but I don't think it lasted that long. No, they didn't have it. I don't believe they brought the oil moyed into Eretz Yisrael. I don't know.
This is a little afterwards, all right.
But then what happened was, as Yeravim came along, he destroyed all the mizbechos that were built by Shaul HaMelech for the people to be makri wherever they wanted. Mm-hmm. And the only mizbech they left was one in Beisel and one in Dan. One in the north, one in the south. And he built the Tuah Golim. That's the Tuah Golim that Yeravim built. Right, one was built in Beisel, one was built in Dan. Again, these agalim were built in order to stop the Jewish people from going to Yerushalayim. Because he was afraid once they were going to go to Yerushalayim, they were going to become loyal to Rechavim again. And he obviously didn't want that to happen because he would lose power. So he only left the two mizbeches in Dan and Beisel. So now, what's happening over here, according to this Medrash at least, it's not referring, when it says that Elio HaNavi rebuilt the Mizbeach, it's not referring to the Mizbeach that he built just now before. Rather, it's referring to the Mizbeach that was built many, many years ago by Shaul HaMelech, and it was destroyed later by Yeravam, because he wanted to get rid of all the other Mizbeachos, besides for the one in Beisel and Dan. And now Elio HaNavi is going back to that Mizbeach that was destroyed many, many years ago by Yeravam, and he's rebuilding that very Mizbeach that Shaul used, and he's going to use that one to prove the Nevi'ah Baal wrong. So there's another pshat that he says V'yirapes Mizbeach Hashem Arus is more of a metaphor. It's not a reality. It's just a metaphor that through Elio bringing Klal Yisrael b'tshuva, through calling them to do tshuva, that's what brought back the mizbeach, meaning the relationship between the Jewish people and Hashem. So it's more. It's not actually a real mizbeach. It's just more of a metaphor referring to the connection between Bnei Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu through them doing tshuva. Okay, let's continue.
So really, wasn't no one else was allowed to build a a mizbeach any place. They had to bring it to Yerushalayim.
Right, right. No, no. Once the Beis Hamikdash was built, then you can't build a mizbeach.
But the mizbeach was
Get it out. What happened? You don't know.
The Beis Hamikdash was standing already.
Right. Right, but this is referring to the period of time when Shaul was king. There was no Beis Hamikdash yet.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's called the Sha'as Heter HaBomas. That was a special time where it was mutter to have Bomas. Yeah. Right?
All right.
So during that time, the Bomas were allowed to be built. Oh. And there were Bomas everywhere. All over Eretz Yisrael. Anyone who wanted could go and build the Bomas in his backyard and bring a carbon. Right, it was pretty easy. Right, you have to go all the way to Yerushalayim. It wasn't as magnanimous as having the Beis Hamikdash, obviously, but it was definitely more convenient. So, this is referring to the Mizbeach that Shaul himself built. Shaul himself built it, and later was destroyed by Yerovam. Okay. So let's continue with Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Ve'igach Eliyahu 12 avanim k'mis b'shiftei bnei Yaakov. He takes 12 rocks, like the number of shvatim, of tribes. Asher hayo dvar Hashem elov lemor Yisrael yi Hashemecha. Right? So he's now using the schus, the very schus of the shvatim themselves, the actual tribes, Reuben, Shimon, and Levi, and so on, to show that they're just like they were connected to each other, and they were all connected to Hashem. So too, he's trying to reconnect the relationship between Bnei Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, before we continue, just before I forget, I want to mention a very interesting medrash. There's a medrash brought down that says that before Mashiach comes, a very similar event is going to happen between the Jewish people and Bnei Shmuel and the Arabs. We're going to have, so to speak, some kind of argument, some kind of dispute over Har HaBayis, Temple Mount, the place of the Makom HaMikdash, where the Beis HaMikdash was built. And the Arabs are going to turn to the Jews and they're going to say, listen, you guys claim this place is yours? All right, no problem. Why don't we do the same kind of test that Eliyahu did with Nevi'ei HaBaal? Right? That's going to prove who really has true ownership over the Makom HaMikdash, over the place of the Beis HaMikdash. Right? And the Jews say, fine, let's do that. Sounds like a good deal. So the Arabs build the Mizbeach. The Jews build the Mizbeach on Temple Mount, on Har HaBayis. And, sure enough, fire comes to the Mizbeach of the...
Jews.
No. Of the Arabs.
I knew you were going to say that. I didn't want to say anything. When you said, it couldn't be the Jews. That's too easy.
But this is from the Jewish source.
Yes, there's a medrash. Yeah.
Wow.
A fire will come to the Mizbeach of the Arabs, and all the Jews are going to run away and hide in the Midbar, in the desert, and then 30 days later, Mashiach is going to come, and going to prove everybody wrong. But, so they actually asked, I forgot which Rav, they asked a certain Rav, if this Medrash is going to happen, and he said that it's not going to happen, you know, in the actual way the Medrash describes it, but the spirit of those kind of events is definitely going to happen. Meaning it's going to be obvious that the Arabs are right and the Jews are wrong. And they really own the Temple Mount. They own the Har HaBayis. Right? That's what's going to happen before Mashiach comes. But it's not necessarily referring to a real Mizbeach. Rather, it's referring to like more of the idea of that kind of thing where it's proven that the Arabs are right.
But this is a different test. I believe they have the same God with question who he prefer. They make different
right
God. This is in this test, Arab and Jews is probably the same God.
Well, I'm saying it's between the God of the Jews and the Baal. The Baal was a different God.
But this is Baal, but in test when Arab and Jews, Arabs, they have a different God, no?
They believe in Allah, right?
No, but it's not God.
What is it?
Believes, I don't know, Magomed, this is man. But
no.
Yeah, they believe in a God.
No, but I'm sure they have own God.
They have what?
They have own God. This, I believe the same God what this Ishmael came
from. Same God, but they believe in a different way altogether.
But as a kind of test.
Somehow, I don't know.
Maybe.
Right, the Arabs question don't about believe what is in Baal, place? Whatever they believe
whose
in,
place
it's not
is
Baal.
Wait, I'm sorry, Arkady, what were you saying? That what?
I don't know, what kind of test, what time it's happened with this Midrash talking about? What time?
Right before Mashiach comes.
But this is not happened? This story is not happened? About Arab Jews from Midrash?
Yeah.
But this is stories happened, or this is only...
It's more a metaphor. It's not the actual event. It's not going to actually build a real Mizbeach, no.
I believe Midrash usually talk about what happened.
Yeah, but again, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to happen, you know, exactly the way, you know, it's described, like, by detail. It's more the idea of things.
I believe they make some reference to real events.
Well, I understand if that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So how you can you prove differently?
You can't. Before it says that before Mashiach comes, it'll be the darkest times.
But who's
and,
right? Oh, they're right.
In the beginning is going to be
why
proven as
right?
if they are in fact right. Yes.
Why are they right? And why did they lose it?
That's going to be the last test before Mashiach comes. It says it's the time before Mashiach comes are described as Hevli Mashiach, the ropes of Mashiach. Hevel in Hebrew means rope. And one of the explanations given is why it's called a rope is because Hashem is going to, so to speak, he's going to shake the rope, and only those who can really hold on to till the very end are going to merit to see Mashiach. But it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be simple. You have to really hold on tight. There are going to be some tough times before Mashiach comes. It'll seem as if it's really, there's no hope. You know, there's no Mashiach, there's no Hashem, there's nothing. It's going to seem very dark and very bleak. But anyone who can hold on until the very end will be zeichet to see Mashiach. It's going to be the final test.
There's some Midrash. There is anywhere you can read it?
I don't remember exactly where it is. I can find it for next time,
what?
If you want.
But this is kind of, now we believe it's kind of metaphor talking about what time this is before Mashiach came.
Yes.
It's happened this way.
Yeah.
But it means before he comes, there is nothing change in this. The Arab temples should be stay. Where stay now?
What temple?
No, but this question about where is the, whose place, who owns the place where is the Jewish temple stay? Arab believe this is their holy place, we believe this is our holy place.
Right.
But before Mashiach comes, this should be not Jewish place.
Right. Yeah.
It means we don't have any authority to come.
Right.
But I believe it's only political question to go to this mount or not. Or this is even religious. For example, if this is Arab, make permission to go to the mount.
Logically, you're not allowed to go because we're not pure. We're tummy.
Even there is no political contradiction, this is no time
right.
to go.
Yes.
But I remember there is real problem when somebody wants to pray, to go to pray in this mount. This was big fighting. Why the Jews want to go to pray?
I'm saying there are places that you're allowed to go, but it's very unclear, like, where the places are that you have to be Tahar in order to go. So that's why most observant Jews refrain from going there, because they don't want to, by mistake, step in a place where they're not allowed to be if they're not pure.
I believe this is only political, but it's even Judaism is not encouraged to go.
No, halachically it's very problematic.
Because this is not a pure place.
Because we're not pure. Saying that place is still pure. It says that the Shekhinah never actually left the Makom HaMikdash. The Shekhinah is always there.
Yeah, but we're still praying in the wailing wall. It's not
right. Well, that's outside the wall.
It's outside.
Outside, yeah, that's outside the wall. That's the outer wall. Yeah,
inside,
and that's fine.
It's more holy place inside.
Yeah, 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 of course. Of course. Inside the Kosel is obviously much more holy. Yeah.
It said that Hadrian came and took down the mountain a thousand feet.
What, Temple Mount?
Yeah.
Okay, this interesting story.
The Harabayat was high. Hamaria was higher than the highest place. Now it's not.
Right.
It's not the highest place.
Right.
You look at Scopus or Harazetim, you're looking down.
Right.
I don't know where he got it, but that he said he took down. You know, he took when Hadrian came after time of Bar Kokhba and Rabbi Akiva, he took down the mountain like 1,000 feet.
Right. Yeah. No, it's not this Al-Santan anymore. Okay, we'll stop here.